Last Witness, a DCI Daily Thriller, Book 2. Written by Denzel Meyrick and read by David Monteith.
Prologue. He lay back on the trolley as though it was a poolside lounger, cushioned from the motion of the ambulance as it rattled and bumped its way through the Glasgow traffic. He was aware of the young prison officer, manacled to him by a sturdy pair of handcuffs, stealing furtive looks in his direction. The older officer, sitting near the door of the vehicle, was chatting to a pretty nurse, his bluff demeanour at odds with her worried face. The woman's nervous laugh at the lame jokes she was forced to listen to bore witness to the fact she was well outside her comfort zone. As the journey continued, his young guard offered him a stick of chewing gum, which he refused with an expressionless shake of his head. The older officer stopped what he was saying as the nurse searched in her bag for something, no doubt in order to save herself from further exposure to his coarse humour. Outside the blackened windows of the vehicle, a horn sounded, then another. There was a screeching of brakes, the sounds of a collision. He was flung against his keeper as the ambulance swerved and came to a sudden stop. There was a scream, and he heard shots being fired. At his feet, the nurse was trying to pick herself off the floor, blood gushing from her nose. The older prison officer was talking hurriedly into a radio as his colleague called out to him in panic, tugging at the rigid handcuffs that bound him tight to his captive. There was a bang, a deep thud, almost too low to hear, as the rear doors of the ambulance splintered inwards in a metallic clash of plastic and steel. He saw a shard of metal embed itself in the face of the nurse. She looked bewildered, her whole body shaking as she lifted a trembling hand to her cheek. Then they appeared, two men squeezing through the ragged hole created by the explosion. Both in black, their faces were masked with balaclavas, and automatic weapons were slung over their shoulders with black webbing straps. He smiled. The older prison officer was forcing himself into a corner of the vehicle, as though willing himself through its sides and out into the street. One of the gunmen stood over him and released a rapid burst of fire at point-blank range. He stared at the sliver of grey-haired scalp that now slipped down the darkened window of the ambulance. The nurse retched at the feet of the other gunman, who kicked her mercilessly in the head. The woman gasped and choked, spitting blood and teeth onto the ambulance floor. The young officer, still manacled to him, face smeared with his colleague's blood and gore, stared down at her. The first gunman pushed his gun into his stomach and pulled the trigger. For a split second, he thought his arm was going to be pulled from its socket as the handcuffs were jerked by the death throes of his captor.
"Get me out of here!"
He could barely hear his own voice. Whether his hearing had been affected by panic or his proximity to the gunshots in the confined space, he didn't know. The first gunman stood over him, then with one hand pulled the balaclava up to reveal most of his face. His smile was strangely familiar, yet entirely foreign. A terrible fear gripped his heart a split second before his head was blown apart. Chapter 1. 5 years later, Melbourne, Australia. Wet days in Melbourne were not unusual, but this one, he thought, was particularly miserable. He looked out over his lush garden as heavy drops of rain splattered onto the jacaranda trees. His grandchildren's toys were scattered on the neat lawn, a riot of dolls, prams, small bicycles and balls of varying size and shape. A climbing frame stood sentinel by a mammoth trampoline, which was in turn faced by a set of swings. For a moment he recalled his own childhood. The playground in Paisley's Gallow Hill was the haunt of bored teenagers drinking tonic wine, drug dealers, and the occasional prostitute. The ground was habitually littered with used syringes, broken glass, and dog feces. He shuddered. Soon the rain would be gone and the warm sun would bring the children of Ringwood East back out to play. That's how the weather went in this country, though the dark clouds looked threatening at the moment. The suburb was really a small, distinct town to the east of the city, a magnet for those with ambition and aspiration. With its good schools, safe surroundings and green open spaces, children could be children and adults could seek refuge from an uncertain, dangerous world in their generously proportioned air-conditioned homes, pools and basement gymnasia.